This episode is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements, the leader in digestive health for dogs, cats, and horses.
Welcome to Chats with the Chatfield. This is a podcast to expand your idea of what impacts veterinarians, pet owners, and basically all animal lovers in the galaxy is humans. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
And if you have not yet subscribed to our show,
why not?
Just go to chatfieldshow.com and subscribe today. And if you want to reach us, you can find me with any message of love and positivity at jen@chatfieldshow.com.
And for everyone else with serious messages and inquiries, we can reach me at jason@chatfieldshow.com. Listen, stop talking. I had to say a different why not, a little more inflection to get more drive more people to be joining our website. I'm giving up. I'm changing it. You can't keep doing the same thing. We got to get more people on the website. Okay.
We do. Go to our website and subscribe, and we'll send you special messages. Okay. So into the chat room. I think that is chat with a capital C today, comes our friend and colleague, Dr. Craig Pryor. And Dr. Pryor is, he's got a lot of hats, Jason, for just one guy. He's an independent consultant, a lecturer, a practice sales consultant, an author, and a practitioner, just a veterinarian.
Oh my goodness.
I know. But here's the thing that we're going to talk about today. He is a board member and a past president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council. So come
otherwise
on into
known
the...
otherwise known as
CAPC.
That's correct.
Okay. But we're going to find out what all that means. Let's get him in here. Dr. Pryor, welcome to the chat room.
Hey, g'day. Glad to be here with you.
Okay. Yes. And there's that lovely accent. First of all, where are you from? You got to tell the folks.
Okay, so I'm from Southeast Queensland in Australia. So Brisbane, Toowoomba area. So it's a subtropical area of Australia. It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
It sounds like it, right?
It does. It does. And I'm American, so I heard Australia. Okay, awesome. So fabulous. I love the detail. Yeah. So what is this thing? So I strongly suspect that many of our listeners are unfamiliar with CAPC, and I think that they should be. I think all pet owners should understand CAPC, what it does and how they can use it. So I guess I'll go to like the veterinarian I talk to most often. Jason, do you know about CAPC?
I do, but only because you said we were talking about it today. I'm going to be super honest with you, and I don't mean to make anyone feel bad, but that's not true. You have mentioned it before, but like everything else, when you mentioned something that I don't know about, I do not want to give you that satisfaction of having that information over me. So I just roll on with it like I understand, and I have no idea.
Gosh.
But I have heard you mention it before when you're rolling out, you know, trying to sound smart and talk about stuff that I don't understand. So I have heard it from you before, but I did not know what it was.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, Dr. Pryor, can you share with us?
Companion Animal Parasite Council. We are a national nonprofit. We are funded by industry, but we are totally independent from industry. Our board is made up of practicing veterinarians like myself. We have preeminent parasitologists, public health veterinarians, and we have a technician as well. So what are we here for? Our aim is to see every pet tested and every pet protected from parasites. That's our mission. If we can ever get to that where every pet is tested, every pet is protected 12 months out of the year, we can pack our bags up, go home.
That's a pretty big mission statement.
That's ambitious.
Every pet, every parasite, and then you go home, right? All right.
Yes.
Well, I don't suspect you'll be going home soon.
What's our engagement strategy? Parasites are dynamic and ever-changing, and parasites are on the move.
I don't think that I've ever heard parasites described as dynamic.
And on the move.
So they're dynamic. Think about, and they're on the move. Think about the Asian longhorn tick, right?
I do that every morning. I think, what's happening with the Asian longhorn tick? I can't believe someone else does that.
So little background for you. They thought it was first found in the U.S. back in, it was about like October 2017. And that was found on a sheep farm in West Jersey, and they thought they had eradicated, and then it popped up again on the same sheep farm in March 2018. And then they went, oh, look out, it's here, it's here, it's here, New York, West, and now it's in 17 different states, right? 17 different states. And this tick exhibits parthenogenesis. It's an asexual form of reproduction. She does not need a man.
stop. Thanks. Exactly. I was like, what just happened here? That tick is like the ultimate feminism. The tick can reproduce all by herself.
Correct.
And she doesn't need a male.
You can get up to 100,000 ticks in one cow and they exsanguinate the cow, suck them dry, right?
No.
Yes.
A cow?
Not believing that. They and exsanguinate tick, the cow? That's a bad
they
deal.
Do.
Tick does not care where it lives. Ticks tend to like brush short, long grass. This right. tick doesn't care. It'll live on short grass. It doesn't care. And now they realize it's probably been in the U.S. since 2010. It was misrepresented or misrecognized, right? They thought it was another type of tick. So, you know, that's just a great example for you.
So, okay. So part of that is, like, when you said sheep, all of our dog and cat people, like, tuned out and said, oh, it's a sheep problem, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was still hung up. I'm like, well, they don't have, like, livestock in Jersey.
There's a backyard pet farms. But yeah. You know, that's the thing about ticks. Ticks are multi-host animals, right?
Okay. So this tick sounds like the originator of adapt and overcome, right? Like, they don't care where they live. They don't need brush. You can keep all of your yard clean. It doesn't matter. You can still have them. It doesn't matter if it's a sheep. It doesn't matter if it's a goat or a cow, a dog, cat, or a person.
A human.
Interesting. Right. Okay. All right. So if you weren't paying attention before, you better be paying attention now. And if you're listening to this episode, you may want to kick over to our YouTube channel because we're going to have pictures up of the Asian longhorn tick. I mean, does it really have longhorns? Well, you'll have to look at the picture to know, won't you? Okay. And then also we're going to get into, so what are you going to do about it, right? Because if you're panicked right now and you're wondering, like, what am I supposed to do about that? I'm not a tick detector.
I'm like, pretty panicked because that tick sounds like it's taking over the world. Like, no question. And well, it causes problems. It's scary.
It is going to, it better look out for influenza. That's all I'm saying.
I was going to say, okay? maybe we can affect it with influenza.
Influenza's taking over the world. Ticks are second. Okay. Mm-hmm. Although I have a friend who would say it all comes back to ticks. Susan Little, shout out. You will always say it all comes back to ticks. Okay, so we're going to go on. We're going to take a short break, pay some bills. But we are going to come right back and we're going to tell you what you can do about it. What's going on in your area? How would you even know? There's tools out there, friends, and we're going to share them with you. So hang with us. We'll be right back. The Professional Animal Care Certification Council, or PACC, brings independent testing and certification to the pet care services industry. Is your dog's daycare or boarding kennel or a groomer manned by PACC certified professionals? Don't know? If you don't know, you gotta ask. Look for the PACC emblem at your facility to make sure that your pet's receiving the highest level of professional pet care, because we all know it's safer in a PACC. Your PACC CE code for this episode is CC220078. It's Dr. Jen the Vet, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Keith Latson. He's got an incredibly interesting story all about full bucket health.
My college roommate and vet school housemate, Dr. Rob Franklin, and I were collaborating on some cases. Both of us were struggling with diarrhea in some of our patients, whether it was after a procedure or after an illness. So we created a formulation, but we didn't want to just create a formulation. We also wanted to create a movement in animal health for being able to help animals in need through the use of our products that we develop. That really has resulted in our one-for-one giving program, which we're really proud of, as much as we are our formulations for dogs, horses, and cats.
And so if you want to know more about their one-for-one giving at Full Bucket, or if you're interested in better supporting your dog, cat, or horse's digestive health, head over to fullbuckethealth.com to learn more. We're back in the chat room. We've inspected. We have no Asian longhorn tick here currently. None of us.
Have you done a tick check
on our today? On our body? Yeah. Right? Every day.
Have you checked your dog today for ticks?
I just checked myself. I didn't. Okay. I didn't worry about my dog.
Good.
Yeah. Cosette, I think, will come and tell me when there's a tick because it wasn't her idea, and she does not get down with things that are not her idea. And I know you know what I'm talking about with French bulldogs, Dr. Pryor. Okay.
Oh, yes.
So we know CAPSI exists, the Companion Animal Parasite Council, and we know that ticks are on the move. So What are we supposed to do as veterinarians and actually as pet owners if y'all's mission is to get every pet tested and get them on the prevention that's available? What does that even look like, and how am I supposed to know? Give us some education.
As a pet owner, what I can tell you is your veterinarian is the local expert. They know what's in your area. They know what your threats are. You just need to talk to your veterinarian. Talk to your veterinarian. They know what to do. Now, it's up to them, the veterinarians, to actually know what's going on in their area. But also, I think the other thing we need to remember as veterinarians is that we have a very mobile clientele these days.
Yes.
COVID changed everything. Like, everyone said, hey, go work from home. And all the millennials go, well, heck, home can be anywhere. So they go spend 3 months in the Northeast and 3 months at Tahoe skiing and 3 months in Florida. And then they come back to where they normally live and they've taken their pets with them. And we need to know what our past travel history of our clients is and what our future travel history is. So we need to be able to work out what their threats will be and then make the appropriate recommendation. So where do we find that out? Well,
I'm going to stop you right there because here's the thing.
I think my microphone is attacked by ticks.
Ticks are holding up your microphone. Well, Dr. Jason's doing a little renovation there in his little studio. I think it's unfair to demand that we rely totally on our local veterinarian, right? I think today's pet owners, I know that the chatterboxes, our listeners, they want to be empowered with information as well. And so, does CAPSI provide anything for pet owners as well as veterinarians?
What we provide to veterinarians is completely open to pet owners. The discussion, so really we can reframe that and say it's a discussion between the client and the veterinarian. It's guided by the veterinarian, and the veterinarian has access to the tools and is helping the client to understand the tools so that they, as a co-op, can work out what the best strategy is to because you're not just protecting that pet, you're protecting the family as well.
Yes. Yes.
Because we've got zoonotic diseases. These vector, it's not just ticks, it's intestinal parasites that are zoonotic. Mm-hmm. And the vector-borne diseases the ticks carry can be we call them zoonotic. They're just transmitted by ticks, right?
Right.
And so it's a conversation between the client and the veterinarian to work out what the best strategy is.
I think, and that's my point, because if I love it when clients come into the exam room with me and they have a piece of paper with them because they printed it out off the internet. Although I'm dating myself because now they just bring it on their phone, right? Just bring it on their phone. They're like, hey man, my brother lives in Hawaii and he said that they're worried about, they just diagnosed this in their dog. Like, are we protected against that? And I'm like, well, don't go to Hawaii.
Don't eat lettuce in restaurants in Hawaii because there's a snail there that harbors a parasite that causes neurolarval migraines. It crawls through your brain and gives you headaches.
Oh my gosh. And it was totally weaponized by Khan.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
The Wrath of Khan.
No one got. I got it. Wrath of Khan. I totally got it. No one else knows what you're talking about.
They do. Oh, okay. All right, Dr. Pryor, can you show us? And those of you listening again, don't drive off the road. There's links in the show notes. Going to be links to what he's showing all of us right now.
What is he showing all of us? By the
all
way,
right.
Hold on.
Yes.
Go from back to the beginning. What is this exactly? What am I looking
so
at?
So I am going. This is the opening page. This is capcvet.org right here.
Ah, the opening page of the CAPSI website that has all this information on it. Yeah. Correct.
And very, very in depth website. Now, first thing I'll point out is we provide guidelines for the veterinary industry. Here are our guidelines. It's all the common parasites and less common parasites of dogs and cats listed alphabetically A to Z by common name and scientific name.
Okay, good. Because I don't know the Latin names of all that stuff.
Yep. Everything you need to know, and our guidelines are written by parasitologists. They're reviewed by a board of parasitologists. Once they're approved, and then they're put up, and then we update them on an ongoing and regular basis.
Okay. All right.
The other thing is click here and we're going to go to the maps. Okay.
Let's go to the maps.
We're at the maps and I'm on. So this is obviously heartworm and we got on canine heartworm, dog, of course, because it's canine heartworm. and we've got it on the year. You can go by all year, or you can go by the month. And then we show you what the prevalence percentage is. Now, I'll point out, I'm going to go to 2012. I'm sorry, 2022.
While you do that, I'm just going to remind everyone that prevalence, right? Prevalence is like what we expect, the normal like number of cases or percentage that are positive for something. That's right. All it is.
We are pulling from the major veterinary labs, Antech, IDEX. We're about to start pulling from Zoetis as well. And this is not the total number of dogs in the United States. This is the total number of tests that we have access to.
Okay.
And even though it's not 100% of the dogs, we've got so many, like 18 million data points, the prevalence percentages are very, very accurate.
I would think. I would think. And this is what we call harnessing the metadata, right?
Yes, exactly. So you can then choose feline heartworm antibody, feline heartworm antigen, or you can go here and you go to intestinal parasites. You go to intestinal parasites, we've got roundworms, hookworms, whipworms, and giardia. If I click down again to tick-borne diseases, we have Lyme, anaplasma, and ehrlichiosis. If I click down again, I've got viral diseases. We've got feline leukemia and feline AIDS there. And we're considered the mapping experts, and we've been asked to map feline leukemia and feline AIDS because a lot of people think there's a relationship between immune-suppressed cats and parasites.
Right.
We want to map it, so hopefully someone will come up and find a relationship there and publish a paper on it.
You even have a tab that says switch to Canada up there.
Man, I know.
This has got a ton of information on there.
Here we go. We've got Canada Lyme disease there, right?
I'm just saying, Stephanie, Kathy, are you listening?
I know. That's my point.
Our friends in Canada.
Yeah. So, and we've got this button here that says get updates. Love you all to click on that to get updates. You'll set up an account with us. You'll choose your state. So I'm in Tennessee, and you choose your county. So I'm in Williamson County. And then you choose your parasite or parasites of interest. Oh, you can choose more than one county if you want. Uh-huh. And we'll send you monthly updates. So why do I want to know that? Because it's timely. It's local. It's motivating. It's happening in my backyard. It's happening in my client's backyard. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. You already told us why you want to know it, because two things, especially with ticks, but parasites are dynamic and they're moving. They're on the move.
They're on the move.
You got to pay attention to them.
I know.
You know that there was a study done by Dr. Jason Drake, who's now with Merck, and he's a veterinarian and parasitologist. He scraped data off the CAPC maps. He pulled off 39 million fecal samples over 7 years and looked at it over time. And what he found, there's an increasing prevalence of roundworms and increasing prevalence of hookworms. Slight decrease in whipworms, but there's true seasonality. So roundworms tend to peak in December, January. Whipworms peak in January, February. And then hookworms peak in June, July. And it shows you that we've got intestinal parasites prevalent year-round. It's a year-round issue.
Okay. I have to say stop for just a second because – you know,
because he's getting so excited, he has to take a breath. I get it. I know. For him. I get
but
it.
I'm just saying, though. So, and Dr. Pryor and I know each other. And so he knows I'm just going to be like, wait a second. Let me be skeptical because so you said he's, you know, he scraped data. I love saying that somebody scraped data. He scraped data from the CAPC website. And what he determined was that the hookworm or the GI parasite incidence is increasing, right?
Hookworms and roundworms, yes.
Hookworms and roundworms are increasing. But I have to say, is that real? Or is that like a product of the data he's scraping, right? Because there are limitations to the data reflected because like you said, you guys compile the data beautifully and you get this spatiotemporal mapping going on. And
big data doesn't lie. Right?
No, it doesn't. But people can interpret big data differently.
And no, prevalence percentages are prevalence percentages.
Sure. Okay. However.
And so if you've got a background noise, you just sort of say this, you know, we're testing more animals, so therefore, if that's the reason for it. But you got to think that there's probably, you would think that there's a prevalence percentage which would be fairly consistent through the population.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing that rise, I think it's a reflection that we're not doing a good enough job with compliance with our, you know, we use monthly heartworm-based preventives that treat intestinal parasites as well, that we're getting lax on that. We're not doing as good a job as we were because we're just getting fairly lackadaisical about it. We got good products. It's going to work. Don't worry about it. Yes, you should worry about it.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I guess I'm just playing a little bit of devil's advocate because, you know, everyone's using metadata to say all kinds of things these days. And I think we're a little bit data insensitive, you know, like, oh, you had 36 million samples. Well, I'm not sure if that's enough. But I think that your point is perfectly spot on that. Yeah, but we're not looking at individual things. We're looking at prevalence over time. And
let me show you that. Can I show you that?
Yes, I would love for you to show us that.
Let's look at West Virginia starting in 2012, okay?
Okay.
So 5% prevalence in the whole state of West Virginia. And look at the map here. Now,
we're looking at Lyme disease now.
Lyme disease.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
And when you look at gray areas on the map here, either one, we're not testing in those areas or we can't pull the data. So it's one or the other. Okay.
And I will say historically, like 98% of Lyme disease cases happen in like 7 states. And like West Virginia is not necessarily one of them. Right.
But
like,
watch this. 2013, about the same prevalence. But watch the map. Watch the map.
I'm watching it.
Watch the orange. Did you see a little bit more orange there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Right. Oh, and look at the prevalence.
It's election night.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. But look at the orange, okay? They're neither Republicans or Democrats.
That's right. They're orange.
That's right.
It's not purple.
The ticks don't care.
Yeah. Look at this, 9.65% prevalence.
Wow.
11.44% prevalence.
And it's darkening. It's actually darkening.
13.24. Look at that map light up. 14.55%, right?
Yeah.
2022, 15.66. And look at the way the map's just lighting up. And I think the biggest things about this, so 2012, CDC came out with a paper that said any prevalence of Lyme in your county over 5%, dogs are sentinel for the risk of human infection at the same percentage. CAPC has since come out with another paper published in 2019, I believe it was. It said it doesn't matter any percentage positive in dogs. Dogs are sentinel for the risk of human infection at the same percentage. So in West Virginia, with dogs having a 15.66% prevalence of Lyme, humans are at a 15.66% risk of developing Lyme as well.
And see, I would not have said that about West Virginia. I mean, that doesn't...
Right. But it doesn't lie. And look at what's happening.
Yeah.
Look at that, right? It's just eating up. And that's black-legged ticks on the move, and they're taking the vector-borne diseases with them.
And I'll tell you that I would say that would you agree with the fact that like this number, so saying it's 15%, it may underestimate slightly the prevalence?
Yes.
Because, again, these are only dogs that have been tested.
Correct.
And so not every dog gets tested for Lyme. And
correct.
So it may be more prevalent than what we're seeing here. But the comparison is true that it's, you know, gone up exponentially since what was the first year you started with showing us?
2012.
Oh my God, 2012. It's not even a long time ago. It's just
so
2012.
It's tripled.
Yeah.
In 10 years.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's
I have a question. You guys are getting all into the data, and I think it's super interesting, and you could probably spend 6 hours on this map alone because it is just a lot of information to sort of digest and look at. But the overall picture is exactly what you said. They're on the move, and they're dynamic. And so is this website and is this group, this is for everybody, right? We're normally talking about veterinarians and a lot of this other stuff, but anybody can go to the website and join and get updates for themselves, correct?
Correct.
We designed the
website for veterinarians, but anyone can access this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we sort of said, okay, there's a lot of data. It gets really busy. How can we do this better just to show people what their risk is, right? I can see the data. What do I do with the data? Okay. So we started doing forecasting back in about 2014, somewhere in there. Anyway, we started forecasting parasite prevalence, heartworm, Ehrlichia anaplasma, and Lyme. And we do a national forecast once a year. It comes out in April. We do a national media tour along with that. But we realize now that we've got so many millions of data points that we can now forecast 30 days in advance in your backyard, in your county. And we realized that that was actually a better way than just throwing data at people. Let's show you what you're
risking. Yeah, people, what happened. They want to know what's happening tomorrow. And you better be right or I'm going to hold you accountable. But that's
okay, so
awesome, actually, what you just said.
We've got papers, peer-reviewed published papers to support our forecast that 94 to 99% accurate.
Wow. And
the weatherman can't do that.
Is that on the website somewhere? Can you show it on the website?
Show me the money. Show me that,
this is
Matt,
awesome.
The forecasting.
This is PetDiseaseAlerts.org. Up here, there it is, PetDiseaseAlerts.org. So we have the forecast maps. We've got a flea forecast, and we've got alerts. So let's go through each of those. So let's go to the forecast maps.
Yes, let's look at a forecast.
So here's your pet forecast. So I've got heartworm, canine heartworm dog. Okay, so you guys are in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Right, let's go to Florida.
Here's all heartworm all the time.
It should be all right. What's happening here?
You've got a high forecast for the next 30 days, which is typical this time of year, right? What county are you in?
Pasco, so around the Tampa area,
Right there,
I'm pointing at my screen. I'm right here. What are you talking about?
Pasco County, you've got a medium risk for a heartworm, which is actually lower than you normally see this time of year.
That's
it's a medium risk, right? So this is the next 30 days. You don't need to take your foot off the accelerator. You need to remember to give your monthly preventives.
Yeah.
Right. Your pet is at risk, right? And the other thing I say is low prevalence does not mean no prevalence.
Right.
So let me ask you a question. Your forecast, so I get it, right? You're forecasting, but what exactly are you forecasting that there's going to be more diagnosed cases of heartworm in the next 30 days? Or what exactly are your dogs are more at risk in the next 30 days? Or what are you forecasting?
We're forecasting what the risk of a positive test is for the next
30 days. I gotcha. Okay.
Which equates to the risk for your pet. So
of course.
Let's go back to here. And I'm in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm in Williamson County. And I've got a medium risk, which is lower than usual as well. Right. But let's change. And let's
West Coast better get on it. Diseases.
I know. The western part of Tennessee. Whoa.
This is the lichiosis. Look at this. This is insane. It's a high risk, which is lower than usual.
So this is a tick-borne disease. Ehrlichia. Yes. Is a tick-borne disease. And look, and Dr. Pryor's having to process so much data. That's why his video gets hinky every so often. When the machine has to work, it gets hinky. Okay.
This is Lyme disease. And for Williamson County, it's a medium risk, which is typical.
Yep.
But
yep.
Look at the way Lyme is oozing down into Tennessee.
It is.
Again.
So I come back out. I'm going to come back out just to Tennessee.
On the move.
Yeah. North Carolina is, I think, a really interesting state because you've got Lyme oozing in up here, and then you've got ehrlichiosis taking over the state from there, and then heartworm is hammering it as well, right?
Yeah.
So the trifecta.
And ehrlichia is the tricky one, right? Like I think that a lot of pet owners, they know about Lyme disease, right? And they know it's tick-borne, I think, a lot of times. But when you're looking at preventing...
Well, down here they do because they all moved from the...
They all moved from New England, right?
But
ehrlichia, I think, is like kind of sneaky from the pet owner's perspective because they don't know about it. We test for it, right?
And it can have very short transmission times.
That was what I was getting at, right? Like that tick can...
There's been studies that show it can be as little as 4 hours.
Correct. And so you need to be up on what sort of tick prevention your dog and cat are on. And I think that's the interesting piece because sometimes I run into pet owners and they're like, well, we don't have ticks. And I'm like, I'm from South Texas and I won't disagree with anyone when they say they don't have ticks. In South Texas, we have ticks. However, it only takes one tick bite. Okay.
Right. And look, I'm up in New Jersey. Okay. You got ehrlichiosis coming up from the south.
That's crazy.
And then you got Lyme disease coming down from the north. I mean, it's just getting hammered. And so transmission times matter. And so, my dog's on not just an oral,
right,
but also a topical.
Yep.
Right. I want to beat ticks I want to just get them before they can transmit disease.
And I agree. So I have friends that live in Virginia and they literally they have a Great Pyrenees. I know it's crazy, but the dog can just go out to do their business at the farm and come back into the farmhouse and you can see the ticks crawling on them. Right. Like, there's
Lyme disease for Virginia for the next 30 days. And here's ehrlichiosis for the next 30 days. Look at
that's
that.
Crazy.
I mean, look at the dual threat you've got there.
Yeah.
Right.
So we double up.
That's more than one type of tick. That's the black-legged tick. That's the Lone Star tick. Right. Yep. We've got multiple ticks going on here.
Yes. Okay. So now everyone's petrified of ticks.
And everything else. And about this map, it's a little scary.
I know. I want to see the flea one because I encounter many people who live in a magic household where they will tell me as they come in with an itching dog that their dog doesn't have fleas because they don't go outside except to do their business. And I'm like, no.
And you know, to me, fleas are easy. We can break the flea life cycle, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So fleas are obligate ectoparasites. What that means is when a flea jumps on a host and takes a meal, it is now an obligate ectoparasite. It does not want to leave that free lunch.
Right.
It's going to stay there. It takes literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fleas on one animal for them to say, oh, I'm tap out. I'm going to find another host, right?
Yeah.
But they stay there. So I can break that flea life cycle. Ticks,
it's really easy.
I can't break the tick life cycle because of the life cycle. So can we talk about that for just 1 minute?
Yes.
Finish off the ticks. So you think about it. So typically the ticks we deal with three host life cycles. So the female tick, she gets on it. She quests, which means she searches for that host. She gets on a host, multiple different hosts that they can get onto.
We'll show a little video of ticks questing because I love it.
There's not a better name thing in veterinary medicine. I don't think that was
the most appropriately
named as a questing tick.
Yeah. Very cool. And so she jumps on a host. She eventually has one blood meal. She drops off, lays 2,000 to 6,000 eggs, some of them up to 18,000 eggs in the environment that hatch out to a larva stage that will eventually quest, get on a different host, has eventually one blood meal, drops off, eventually becomes the nymph that then quests, gets on a different host yet again, eventually has one blood meal, finally drops off, eventually becomes an adult, and then the life cycle starts again. So average life cycle length of time, 3 to 4 years, and they spend less than 10% of their total life on all hosts combined.
Right. That's crazy.
So we can't break the life cycle. We just have to kill them before they spread disease.
Right.
Bottom line, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Right. So let's move on to fleas. Here's your daily flea forecast. And this is, we got the date here. This is 3/3/2023. So this is where fleas are very active. Okay. And it's really purely.
That's not surprising.
Right. It's a function of temperature and humidity.
Right.
That's what fleas rely on. Now, here's the historical video. This is November, December.
We're going to January. Oh, look at the colors moving.
Yeah, right? It's like boiling, right?
I know.
March, April,
look
going
at that.
To summer months. Look at the way the – look at May.
Oh, my Lord. Look at Minnesota and North Dakota.
Yeah.
They're hot.
Oh, my gosh.
They're hot.
Isn't that cool?
That is – okay.
It's like a zombie map.
And I'll tell you, pet lovers out there, I saw a market research data point that said that, I don't know, like half of pet owners give one dose of preventive, like flea prevention or like parasite.
So you know average usage is 2 to 4 months for flea tick product and 4 to 6 months for a heartworm-based product.
Right.
And
crazy.
60 to 69% of all clients leave vet clinics without ever bothering to get anything for flea ticks or heartworm.
Right. So a little bit, I'm putting that on my professional family, right? Because if you didn't get excited about ectoparasite prevention, then how's a pet owner supposed to know that it's that crucial, right, to their pet's quality of life and length of life?
Right.
But then the other piece is, come on now. You got to give the stuff routinely, mark it in the calendar, set your phone, something so that we give it, or get the long lasting ones. And then you don't have to remember as often. So I just think that's incredible. So I do have one more question here before because we've packed a ton of information into this episode already, but you know, I'm going to ask about one of my two favorite pathogens. Jason, which one do you want to find out about first?
Me? Either one is fine.
Okay. How about lepto? Can you show us?
And I'm also not shocked you went to lepto.
I feel like I'm on a game show. Can you show us lepto? Yeah. So
we have alert maps. This is the last 30 days. This is the states and counties where leptospirosis has shown up.
Has been tested for and positive.
And we have positive. And I think that this is, so number one, as a veterinarian, I think leptospirosis vaccine should be a core vaccine. Full stop. It's not considered a core vaccine, and it should be.
It's core if Dr. Jen is your vet. I can tell you that right now.
Or if you see me, pick me, right? It's core for me because it's so zoonotic and so many people get it and they don't know they've got it and it can kill you, right?
And I would tell you in the chat room, we did some time ago ban the phrase core vaccine because I think they should all be an individual lifestyle-based assessment. Because people get in trouble when they do, lazy and rely on some core.
So individual lifestyle assessment, we used to think of lepto as a farm dog problem. Now it's a high rise dog problem, right?
It is. It is. Everywhere. Dogs under 15 pounds, dogs living in urban areas, and dogs unvaccinated. Those are the three risk factors for your dog getting lepto. But if you want to know what's going on specifically in your area, you can look here. But I'm going to say the blanket caveat, which says lepto, people don't test for lepto as often as they should. And this data reflects tested dogs. So this radically underestimates it.
Underestimates.
Yeah. Knoxville, Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee, both had cases of lepto.
Urban.
And Florida, look at, Miami-Dade County, right? Broward County, Palm Beach County. Oh, ouch, right? Indian River.
I'm kind of shocked it's not more red. One would think it's more red.
This is just the last 30 days.
I see. Yeah, but I still.
But well, and then people say in California, people say we don't have parasites or diseases out here. Look at this. This is Santa Barbara. Look at this. Ventura County, Los Angeles County, Orange County, San Diego County, lepto everywhere.
Well, in LA, in late 2022, they had a massive, by massive, I mean hundreds, if not thousands, of confirmed cases of lepto in dogs and influenza.
Yes. And that was actually because of a bunch of imported dogs.
Well, then there's that.
Right.
Yeah. So because dogs move too. Dogs move just like people do.
I look at canine influenza. We were just talking about earlier that it's endemic. Basically, it's just, when are you going to have an outbreak? It's not if. When?
It is now endemic, which means it's circulating in North American, American dogs for sure, consistently, all the time.
Dallas just had a big outbreak of canine flu, right?
Yep.
And actually distemper too. Yep.
Palm Beach. Right?
Yep. Yep. And that's in the last 30 days, folks. Yeah. Last 30 days. So.
Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing, and I guess that's the frustrating thing for me as a person who loves preventive medicine, is that we have just talked about some very preventable diseases in dogs that not only can kill your dog, but a lot of them you can become infected with. And so, like with Cosette, I don't want Cosette having no disease she could give me, right? Because she sleeps in the bed, she lives on the couch, and she's always with me. And so I think a lot of people have that relationship with their dogs. And so it's easy to prevent these things. It's super easy.
I agree.
It's super easy.
Talk to your veterinarian.
Absolutely. Right. So talk to your vet. And then if you're afraid, right? Because there is a lot of, do we get to say misinformation, Dr. Jason? Can we use that word?
No, there's just a lot of information, period.
There's a lot of information.
It's a lot of incorrect information.
Thank you. There's a lot of information that's less than correct and also less than transparent, right? And so if you've seen some of that on the internet, tell your veterinarian that, right? So if you've seen stuff about lepto, if you see stuff about flu, if you see stuff about tick prevention.
Lepto, they say, lepto vaccines cause massive reactions. No, it was October 2018.
Not anymore.
GAVMA, they've got that peer-reviewed article that says it's no more reactive than any other vaccine. They've purified these vaccines really well. That's all.
Yeah, but man, you'd be surprised. It's just really
Dr. Moore, and Dr. Moore gets the shout. Yeah.
The weird stories that stick with the majority of people. Like that is, it's just weird what people just pass down to person to person. Oh yeah, that's going to give my cat cancer, and I can't do that. It hasn't been true for a very long time. So
yeah, it's scary. And it's scary. Okay, listen, it's not just scary for pet owners, it's scary for veterinarians. Because right. if you've ever seen one of those rare cases of true anaphylaxis, because they are actually quite rare, it is really scary.
Yes,
it's really scary. But also, like, we can treat that. We can treat that. That's why sometimes it seems like it's taken a little while for you to check out, like, especially if you come see me for vaccines. I want you to remain there for a good 12 or 15 minutes after I give your dog 100%. Vaccinations. Because if you're going to have a really dramatic reaction, it's going to happen then. And I want you there still so that I can intervene immediately. But if I let you just walk out, you're in the car on the way home, God forbid, and your dog starts, you know, vomiting or just lays down and becomes severely lethargic very quickly. You're in the car. I want you to be at the clinic, right? So I can intervene effectively. But also if you're worried about that, we can prevent that too, right? We can pre-medicate your dog and prevent that too. That's a thing. So those sorts of reactions do happen, but they're really, really rare. But if you're afraid, you should share your fear.
Right.
Share your fear. So, all right. So this is a ton of information that Dr. Pryor has thrown at us.
Yeah, listen.
Great energy.
It's a ton of information, but you gotta talk to you guys did a good job getting all that information.
Yes.
But the way you guys lay it out and the way the website, because we've all been to bad websites, the way the website is laid out, it's phenomenal. It's even someone like me can follow it.
Yes.
And it makes sense and it goes, it is really intuitive. So don't be scared of that giant amount of information, because you guys have done a great job of packaging it in a way that anybody can sort of understand it, or if you can't understand it, ask your veterinarian. They can absolutely help you understand it.
Yes.
So we need to get this people out, this information out for everybody. It's great.
Yeah. And you can sign up. That's the other piece that actually I was unaware of that, like full disclosure. I did not know.
The alerts as well.
Yeah, the alerts are what's great. People love getting all that stuff on their phone. Oh, I got to pay attention to this, right?
Yeah.
It's just really good. Super smart.
Yes. Yeah, so
kudos to you, your whole group. I think it's great.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
And nonprofit. And again, I'll say they're not beholden to any single piece of the industry, right? Like
we just provide the information and the threat and the risk data. And it's up to the drug companies can recommend whatever product they want.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, your veterinarian can work out what products they want to use.
Yeah. Which is whatever is best for your pet. And also if you're sitting there right now listening, you're thinking, well, but I have a cat that's 100% indoor cat. I don't need to worry about that.
Cats are just as much at risk.
You are wrong. And so I would dare you. I would challenge you. Go to the websites. And again, we're going to have links in the show notes. But go to these websites and check out the risk for cats in your area. And then get thee to the vet. Get thee to the vet. This is a lot. Dr. Jason, did you have any other like burning questions for Dr.
No, Byron? But again, I was just blown away. Like it was really impressive. I've seen a lot of websites with a lot of metadata and they're just garbage and you can't read them. But this website is really fantastic. And to go check it out. I mean, everybody should just go check it out. I can't say it enough.
Dr. Pryor, anything that any other burning thing you think every pet lover should know that they might not otherwise, or did we get it all?
You know, protect your pet. You're protecting your pet. You're protecting your family because there's so much zoonotic risk, and your veterinarian is the local expert. Talk to them.
Yeah.
And that's why we love you.
I know. This is fantastic. So I guess that's all we have today, all about all things CAPC. Check out their website. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
And we'll catch all of
you.
We'll catch all.
No problem.
We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
This episode is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements, the leader in digestive health for dogs, cats, and horses.